I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
What is going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Before we start, please hit subscribe. Please share the podcast to everybody if you enjoy the episode. It means the world if you do. Please do that. Anyway, podcast time. And this week got my good friend A Vision on the podcast. Anthony came on the podcast during the pandemic. And since then, we just got really tight and really close. And he played a few shows on my tour with me. We hung out a lot at shows and kind of outside of shows. And we just got him really well. I class him as one of my real close friends in the industry now, which is, it's really nice how the relationship has blossomed. So I wanted to get him on. I love his music. His music features in my sets a lot over anybody else's as well. His music's insane. He's a lovely guy. He works fucking hard and he deserves every bit of success he's getting right now. So without further ado, A Vision. And we're live. Mr. A Vision. How's it going?
It's good, man. Everything's good, you know.
Oh, there we go. Now we can actually see the studio.
Yeah, you can see my studio.
There we go.
Yeah, I unblurred it for you.
Thanks, mate. Looks a bit better.
It's sad, man.
We have I'm gonna have to focus on your face. Out of here.
Yeah.
You're moving. When you moving?
We close on our house in January, so you know, this isn't gonna be my home anymore, man.
No, so, are you gonna completely change the studio?
Yeah, I can't keep it here. I need a home studio. I mean, This is my parents' home, so it's like, You know, I can come down here anytime I want, but it's, you know, it's convenient to have it right in your, you know, your home. Because, You know, an idea pops in your head, you run downstairs and you could start something. But, yeah, man, it's a sad moment. I redid this whole studio with my dad maybe about 5 or 6 years ago. Mm. And, that was really when I started A Vision. You know, I broke off my real name and I started producing as my alias. And all my music has been written down here. Yeah. You know, it's like the start of everything for me. So it's definitely a sad moment to leave. But
do you think that the new place is going to change the music?
I don't think my setting will change that much, you know. But, you know, it depends. You know, I'm secluded down here. You know what I mean? Like, It's like, you know, 2-3 o'clock in the morning, I could be cranking no matter what. Yeah. You know, that's what I'm going to have to figure out in my new place. But I don't think my sound will change much. You know, I think overall my sound has definitely changed from Anthony 4 years ago and now. Obviously, just, you know, inevitable, but definitely think my sound has definitely evolved and I'm reaching into different genres that I wouldn't, you know, normally go in. Like I have a garage track I'm working on right now. Sick. That I you know, I was like, fuck it, let's just see what happens, you know.
It's also garage, mate.
Oh my god.
What mean, fucking Americans.
Oh my god.
No, because for me, like, Detroit massively changed my sound.
Did it really?
Yeah, it really did. Like,
was it because you were in Detroit?
Yeah.
Like, if you moved to New York, do you think your sound would change to more of a New York sound?
No, I think just Detroit's just very different to where I'm used to.
Yeah, I could see that.
So I mean, it's like much rawer. It's like much grayer. Like,
yeah,
it's like there's a no disrespect to Detroit, but there's a lot less interesting things to kind of nice things, if that makes sense.
Correct. I get that.
Whereas like, I for me, my environment definitely does change a lot.
Yeah. You're in the UK now, right?
Yeah.
And how different is your studio from?
Very different.
Like, really?
Yeah. My studio in Detroit has no sunlight. It's like all boarded up.
That's kind of like this. I mean, I have one window here.
Yeah.
Like on the left side, but the studio is very long. You know, I'm excited to go into my next studio and actually like sound treat it and do it properly. Not that this isn't sound treated, but you know, it's a home studio. It's kind of
So with this studio here, it's like a room in my place, but like I just put sound a bit of sound treatment, but not much.
Yeah.
It barely does much. But like it's a very different room. But I think I've also produced that very differently now. Like used to, like I have curtains on the windows. I used to just like produce with them closed and it would literally just be a dark room all the time.
Yeah.
And I think just as I've got older, I'm like, I want sunlight. And
yeah,
like,
I think that's what I'm more excited about for this next place is, you know, I have windows throughout the whole you know, second floor and the basement floor. There's there's a walkout patio right outside.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to have like some natural lighting in there, you know, that it just amps up your mood. You know what I mean? I'm looking forward to like taking, you know, a few days a week and just, you know, whatever's surrounding me, I'm just going to, you know, see what comes out, you know? Now did you replicate like what you have here?
No.
Over
no. The only thing is speakers, even sound card. I have different in Detroit.
Really?
Like, I literally don't, I have one. This is terrible. And I think it's because I really don't now spend that much time in Detroit that like I just invest everything here. But like my keyboard is a MIDI keyboard that's like this. And that's all I have in Detroit. Like everything else is just in the box.
But your room is pretty, like it's a nice room.
It's a really nice room. Like I got a acoustician to build all the sound the sound treatment, and then my dad came over and we built it. He like flat packed it, and then we built it all together. And it's like it sounds amazing in there.
Monitors are different too.
Monitors are the same. It's the only thing. Only thing I kept speakers.
Yeah,
but the speakers are too small for that room.
Really?
Yeah. So I had to get a sub, and
I'm nervous about these being too big for. I mean, these are only 5.5 or 6.5. I think these are. These are the full cal.
Yeah.
But they might be too big for the room I'm going in. But honestly, from like the depth standpoint, probably
about
not
the same. Yeah,
this isn't a deep room. It's deep this way.
Yeah.
You know? Which ideally I should be running this way.
Yeah, you should be. Yeah.
You know, if you're gonna be quote unquote correct.
Yeah.
Like your room is your
it's
you're
pretty
in the right.
square. Yeah. But yeah. I'm in the right.
But depth wise, I'd probably sit around the same size depth anyway.
Mm.
You know. But yeah, if for me, I think it starts off with your laptop, right? So like I have a specific production laptop.
Oh, do you not travel with that?
No, I will sometimes. My management yells at me because they're like, dude, you're crazy for traveling with two laptops. And then I have my production laptop, my DJ laptop.
Yeah.
Which is just a quick 13-inch MacBook Pro, 2 terabyte.
Okay. Yeah.
And but I do have Logic on here as well if I need to pop something open. Like I started that garage track on this laptop. I almost stuttered when I said that. But
do you like riding on the road?
You know what? For years, dude, I was a beast at it. Like when I first started traveling with Victor, I was a monster.
Yeah.
Like I would fucking pop open that laptop right on the plane and crank out musical typing tracks. You know what I mean? Like I would be a beast. The more, like, I think the pandemic kind of screwed me with that because like I got so comfortable getting into this room and I invested, you know, I got a new sound card, new monitors, you know, a few new pieces, and I got super invested into the room. And I think that kind of messed me up a little bit, but I've been getting back to, you know, even if it's just a loop or just getting an idea across it, you know, to come back home with maybe four ideas, it makes your work process, your process a little bit, you know, faster. Because when you get home, you know, you get done with the tour or whatever, you know how it is. You get home and you got a boatload of stuff to still get done, you know? Having that ready to go is a big help.
Yeah, I think for me, like the way my writing has changed since the pandemic has changed so much compared to what it was like pre-pandemic and during the pandemic. It's like worlds apart. So for me, I actually struggle to write on a plane now because it's like a lot of the things I'm doing now are just finishing records, and I don't really like finishing records on a plane because
I like finishing in my studio as well. Yeah. So I'll start something and then I'll finish it here.
I'm also trying not to write club records, trying to write actual songs with,
I get you on that, which is a completely different dynamic when, you know, you're writing on the road. It's very hard to do that on the road. Because you're writing different parts.
Yeah, yeah.
And you want to be a little bit more musical. And it's hard to stay musical when you're working on just a little musical typing keyboard. But I will say I probably have done a little bit of both, like writing regular songs and, you know, club tracks on the road. But I do enjoy, you know, a nice Sunday off, coming down here and just blurting out whatever I want to blurt out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I haven't written club records for a long time.
Yeah. And you're working on your album, no?
No.
No? What happened?
I don't have an album on the way.
No.
We're not allowed to talk about that.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Shit.
I'll cut that out. No, not even friends know about it. Literally, like, 5 people know about it. Mm. But yeah, I just haven't had the urge to, like, write club records. It's been really weird. It's really weird. But I've been writing for other people. Like, I had somebody in the studio last week. And, like, I wrote, like, 7 club records for them in, like, 3 days.
Really?
Yeah, and it was really nice to write for somebody else because there's zero, like, I don't care. I don't care if I like it. It's not for me.
Yeah, you could be as corny as you want. You could do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah, and it's like they were sat next to me. It's super easy, really nice to do. But it's like there's zero pressure.
Yeah, that's nice. For sure. I think ever since my album came out, I cooled off, right? Like I didn't write a lot of, not that I didn't write. If I showed you the amount of demos that I have, it's insane. Yeah. I think that's what keeps me like in my mind, it keeps me like very focused and like it makes me aware that I'm still working on my career. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm very adamant about making sure I work on my career.
Yeah, yeah.
But after my album, I mean, I was just really like, I don't know, like I was really known for all my groovy techno jacking sound. And that's what, you know, got me to the point where I was at. But I did write different music, obviously, but, you know, I was definitely more underground, I would say. And I still love that stuff. And I still make that stuff, but like I just felt like, you know, my album was nothing like that at all. Mm. You know, there's a few jacking type of records, but not really.
Yeah.
And I think working with Mesioplex really changed that for me too. Like it was that that clearance of, you know, digging a little bit deeper and coming up with a whole new sound. You know, none of the stuff that I've made in the last, you know, few months really sounds like my old stuff at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of changed and evolved, and it's its own identity in a way,
yeah.
Which I'm happy about. I like that. It's just, you know, I don't even think it matters anymore. Like if you're super underground or if you're, you know, more of a popular or pop DJ-esque, you know what I mean? I don't think that even, because now it's all crossing paths.
Is there such thing as underground? Like,
I don't think anymore.
I've been talking about this a bit, and I think that's what, there's massive pros and cons to the scene right now.
Yeah, there is.
And I think the part that there isn't an underground, and I say isn't an underground like that, maybe there is, and maybe I'm just like fully unaware of it. I'm sure there is.
I think there is, like, there's definitely an underground techno scene going on in New York and everything, and but it's more like Gabber techno style, yeah, and harder techno stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think there's as much of a techno, like, underground scene as there used to be.
Well, I think everybody made it.
Yeah.
Which then turns it more, way more commercialized. Like, look at the likes of, like, City Fox, of what they do with techno parties. Like, they're putting on big techno lineups.
Yeah. And it's, like, it's weird because there's so much different techno now, you know, because everyone just subdivided a genre.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't consider, like, melodic techno... techno.
I knew we were going to talk about this, and I can't fucking wait.
Yeah. Well, I don't consider that techno. It's not.
Yeah.
You know, techno is, to me, it's like where you're from. You know what I mean? That's techno. You know, tribal influence, all that stuff. That to me is techno. Melodic techno really picked up where progressive left off, to be quite honest.
And, it's just and where trance of, and where trance left off.
Yeah, it's a slower down version of trance.
Yeah, I had Ferry Corsten on the podcast, which obviously
he's a legend,
fucking trance legend, right? And he was even saying, he's like, the music that is being released now is trance. It's not progressive techno. It's trance.
No. It's trance. Yeah, exactly. It's crazy to me that because it was house, trance, techno.
Yeah, yeah.
That was it. You know what I mean? And progressive house, really. But progressive house was like a blend, you know, of everything. And then, you know, there was certain breaks of styles, like there was tribal techno, but it wasn't like its own genre. It was still techno.
Yeah.
It was just tribally. I don't know where things got confusing. Now we got peak time techno and raw techno and all this shit that it's just like, yo, let's like, Can we not do this?
Yeah.
Like, it's just confusing.
I think Beatport fucked it for all of us.
I love Beatport.
I love Beatport, but they fucked it.
they did. They did, absolutely. But it was like they almost created a lane for that certain style of techno that's been coming out that's very popular right now, right? And I guess they need a home for it. But, like, I don't even know what I make anymore.
Yeah. I struggle with it as well for me because it's
because I don't consider you like some of your records are heavy and definitely techno.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But then like I'll see like a record that you've made or have I made and I'll see it on peak time techno. I'm like, yo, this is not like no disco to me. Right.
Yeah.
Is that that's not a techno record.
No, that's quintessential tech house to me.
Yes, it is.
Like, actual tech house.
Actual tech house. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
But, like, for me, like, my last single, Throw Your Soul Down, Beatport put it in progressive house.
Okay.
And I'm like, this is just house music.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You're writing a heavier house music, I would say, like, because your kicks are very strong.
Yeah. But it's just like, it's so weird to me.
Yeah, I don't know where everything fits anymore.
And then they won't argue. They won't, like, listen to you. So they're just like, no, it's going in this, whether you like it or not.
Oh, dude, my whole album went into techno peak time. And I was like, no. That cannot happen. And we had to go back and change everything. I was like, there's no way this is all peak time techno. I would say majority of it isn't peak time techno at all.
No.
Like, you're telling me in my mind there's peak time techno? That's not a vocal record. It's a dance record. You know?
Maybe the Warehouse remix.
Yeah, exactly. The Warehouse remix is techno.
I play that so often.
Do you?
Yeah, mate.
I've only played that a few times.
Dude, it slams. You need to play it.
I feel like, you know, for certain settings it's right, you know, like big festival, I feel like I can get away with it. I've played it like maybe a handful of times. I don't know. I've always passed it up. I don't know why. And Eric plays the shit out of it too. Like, he always plays it and it goes off. You know what I mean? I definitely like it.
I prefer it to the original. Sorry.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's funny because I knew, like, what making the original, I had to make a big, big techno feel record out of that. And it's funny, I keep thinking of other ideas I can do with that original. Yeah. You know, it's kind of endless. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know why I haven't played it as much as I should have. You know,
I always play it at Space, and it's fucking slams.
Yeah, no. What time do you play that at?
It's a great opener.
Yeah.
It's a great open at like 4 or 5 a.m. when it's still dark.
Nice.
And
yeah,
it's like, it's a good like opening record because you got like really long breakdowns.
Yeah, that record has a bunch of breakdowns. Mm. A bunch. Yeah. Eric actually, he'll hit the beat jump on it because it's like, dude, that second breakdown's like over a minute.
Yeah, that's what I like though. There's something about in a DJ set.
When you can break it up like that, it's nice.
Yeah, because I think it needs to happen way more than what people do.
Yeah, because everyone's slamming it.
Mm, and I just don't like. I like. Have you ever seen it when like a DJ just stops the record, like accidentally the power goes out, right?
Yeah,
and it's almost like a reset.
It is. It gets the party going.
And it needs to happen. So that's why most of the time now I actually don't mix into a DJ set. I start from fresh. Because
it depends for me. If the vibe is strong and I want to just keep that vibe going, I'll mix in 90% of the time. But like festivals, obviously, I'm not going to mix in.
Yeah.
But I like the whole stop and go, but also, like I said, depending on the vibe, if the vibe is really good, I'll give that thing a run. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I'll
it's like a sweaty club and it's like everything's fucking popping off, then
it's a bit like different. In Berlin, like when I played Watergate, it was just kind of seamless.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was, we all just mixed into each other because the vibe was just going nuts.
Yeah, and you can't stop that.
In Paris, like Eric just mixed right into me, you know. But yeah, I don't mind that reset. The reset is good. And I also think like volume control as a DJ too is something that's important. Like I did it in Paris. It was I posted the video of me playing and you know, I was playing my track Contrast and you know, just giving it that little, you know, few decibels lower, really, like, it just kind of makes the crowd just, like, realize what's going on. Mm. You know what I mean? And makes them want a little bit more. Yeah. And I did that, and it, you know, sure enough, make it louder, the whole place goes nuts, you know? And, like, those are little tricks, I think, that I've learned just from watching, you know, older DJs and experiencing it, too, you know? When the lights go out, you're like, what the hell?
Yeah. It's always nice. It's always a nice feeling when that. And I think, it feels like it happened way more often, like back. I sound like an old man and I don't mean it in an old man way, but like back in the day with like the older DJs, the kind of they would more likely do shit like that, where it was like fade it down for a long time.
Yeah.
And then it would come back in. Don't really see it that often.
Yeah, it's true. I think now everything's just kind of just been fucking wailing. You know, everything's fast, hard, fast. No, no dynamic in sets.
Yeah.
And I think you see that when certain DJs play, you know, you'll see some dynamic and you'll see the difference in a set.
Massively.
You know, yeah. You know, it's cool, man. It's cool to rip it 142 and just go hard and
I can't let it rip. It.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, don't get me wrong. I'm like, I know how to play 140 BPM. Not really, actually. I've never played 140. I'll tap out at like 134, 136, yeah. max. But like, I like playing loopy techno and doing that whole riff. But eventually, you got to break it up. If you don't break it up, your crowd's gonna sit there all day, just bob their head.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
It's funny, man. I was watching Steve Rockmod in Amsterdam. Mm. And, you know, he was playing loopy techno and it was really good stuff. Really, really good. And then out of nowhere, bro, he ripped out Beat It by Michael Jackson, the instrumental.
Yeah.
Over a loop. And I get chills talking. It was nasty.
Yeah.
And the guitar solo came in. Everything came in. And I was just blown away that he pulled that out and just... Bro, it was sick. It was sick. We were at Shelter.
It's the best feeling when, I think, for me, like a while ago, Loco Dice was the best of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Luciano.
Where, like, yeah, no disrespect, like, it's a talent, but it's like you're playing pretty boring music for a long time.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you pull out an absolute stonker.
Yeah.
And the crowd just is like, I've needed this for probably the last half an hour and you made me wait even longer.
Bro, even you know, like Corolla will sit there, you know, and he'll not that he's playing boring, he'll just play his thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, out of nowhere, just a classic just comes out ripping. Ricardo does the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, you'll listen to Ricardo and he'll play some chill stuff for, you know, maybe a half hour to an hour and then out of nowhere, just a bomb rips the floor.
That's how records get made as well. I remember Loco Dice did the Dion Freak Like Me.
Yeah.
The like remake. I can't remember. Yep. Someone who did a remake. But like, those are the times when everyone gets their phone out and goes, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah. I think Ben Clark too broke that record hard. Yeah. There was a video of Ben Clark playing that.
Yeah. It's wild, isn't it? That all these Dion records are coming back.
Oh, I know, man. He's a legend too, man. He's nasty. Definitely, like, see, but it's crazy to me, like a guy like that, like as much as he's respected in our industry and everyone loves his music, doesn't tour that much.
Mm. Yeah.
You know?
Well, it is a sad thing about music. I don't think it's just dance music. I think it's generally like everything. Yeah. Like you look at, like, even for me, like all the old Motown and soul records, like they're not doing anything now, and half of them are still alive still, or maybe they're older, but like none of them actually made any money out of anything. Although the record labels made a shit ton of money, they didn't.
Yeah, no, it's true.
And it's like, even when I had MK on the podcast, like I've spoken about it for years with him. It's like he did Burning. He did Always in the 90s. Like we were just born the years that he made it, literally.
Yeah.
And then he stopped making house music because he wasn't making any money. And then went into hip hop, didn't really make any money in that, made a bit, wrote Will Smith's album, didn't really make much.
He wrote Will Smith's album?
Yeah, he did a bunch of songs to Will. He was like Will Smith's in-house producer.
Oh my God, so that's crazy.
He wrote like all of like Willow's and Jaden's and stuff as well.
Oh,
at
shit.
At the time. And then house music did well for him.
Yeah.
But it's like Dion, when that Freak Like Me came out, Dion had a period of doing really well again.
Yeah, no, for sure.
But like, and like, it's weird. It's really tough. I almost kind of wish I could manage them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of those guys, you know, the hard thing is they just didn't have that team behind them.
Mm.
You know, because you look at like a guy like Kerry Chandler, who's been in the game for years and he's still touring very actively and
yeah,
killing it still.
Yeah.
Masters at Work, you know, Louis Vega, Kenny Dope, those guys are still crushing.
Yeah.
You know, so I do think it comes down to, you know,
who you have around you.
Yeah, big time. And just knowing how to, and if you don't have anyone behind you, it's knowing how to manage yourself and manage your career.
Yeah.
Like, Victor's never had a manager.
It's crazy.
Right? So he's just had his agents. He has an assistant that helps him with everything, but yeah, he's never had a manager. And I don't think back then you really needed a manager. I think you needed to know how to work your career a little bit. You know?
Do you think you need a manager nowadays?
Always. Mm. Yeah. Without a doubt.
Not from the get-go, though.
What's that?
Not from the get-go.
No, not from the get-go. No. I didn't start off in management. But, like, once the Avision thing was coming alive, I already had my management, mm-hmm, and we kind of went through the transition together. But yeah, I think your management is really in the beginning stages important, because that's who's pushing you.
Yeah.
You know, like that's how I broke out in New York in a way, you know, because my management was pushing me to play with bigger artists and open for them and get the feet wet. You know, so I think that was important for me. And I think it's worth it and beneficial for management to get involved at a younger stage of the career.
Yeah.
Because they can help build it. Number one, number two, you know, it's, they're getting onto someone before someone else has the opportunity to get onto someone.
I think also we all get stuck in our own little ways to a certain extent. It's like the older we get, the harder it is to be in a relationship with people. It's just like, it's just how it is. Like it's just what we get used to. It's like, I think also if you're going in as a manager to manage somebody that's been successful in the past,
like it's harder.
It's super hard.
Yeah.
Super hard.
Yeah. Because they're set in their ways for sure. That's why I you know, a lot of artists will just swap management like it's nothing. Like, and I'm just like, my management's been involved with me from the get-go.
Yeah.
You know, and I have a great relationship with my management. If something's bothering me or, you know, annoying me, I say what I have to say. They say what they have to say, you know, and there's a line of respect there that's never really, you know, passed over, and we get it, you know. And if you could rock with, you know, a few people that actually understand you and what your goals are, and they have the same goals, then it's worth it, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just also luck. Is that you're lucky?
It is. It's not always meant to be. I totally get that.
I've had some shit. I've had two previous managers or management companies, and like it starts off good and then ends pretty badly.
Yeah.
Just like a relationship. It's just like, it is just like a relationship. And that's
now,
the thing.
After it ends pretty badly, is there like a hiatus that you all take? And then it's like, hey, listen, no hard feelings. We're cool.
My very first manager, I have like no hard feelings. It ended pretty badly. And he dealt with it very badly. And I think he would admit to that.
Yeah.
But we were both young in the industry and didn't really have a fucking clue what to do. So it was what it was. My last managers, I didn't give a fuck. Like I'd happily, but I remember seeing her in public and went to give her a hug and say hi. And she was like, what do you think you're doing?
Wow.
Yeah. She was not into it at all.
See, that's kind of bitter, man. Like even agents, you know, I have still a good relationship with my last agent, you know, keep it cool.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of respect there and, you know, work is work. You never know, man. You know, you always need everyone in your corner in a way, right? You always need that help. And I always say it's, you know, I don't like burning bridges at all.
100%. 100%.
So I like to keep it cool. But That's crazy that, you know, I figured after the smoke clears and everything's good, you know, have a drink together or whatever.
I think it's just individuals. Some people just can't take the personal side of it out and can't actually look like, actually, you know what, he's doing better off without me.
Yeah.
Like, or we're all doing better off without each other. So we're all winning. But I think it was more of a financial thing for them where it's like, oh, we've lost that finance. We've lost that income now. Like, fuck him. Which then goes to show what it was all about in the first place.
Yeah. See, that's the thing I think with my management. Like, they started with me 7 years ago, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like there was no money to be made.
Yeah.
You know, this was an investment. So now it's, you know, now they started making money. And, you know, granted, they're not millionaires. No one's a millionaire over here.
Yeah.
But that's the risk and that's the investment you take on a younger artist and building a younger artist, you know. And it's nice to know that they're not involved with me for the money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they've taken hits when I've taken hits.
Yeah.
So that's, and honestly, bro, because they've been with me for so long, you know what? I hope they're clearing $1 million off of me. You know what I mean? I always tell my manager, Jermaine, when, you know, I said, I want everyone driving a Bentley.
Same. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's the truth. You know, I want houses next to each other. I want, you know, If I'm eating, I want everyone to eat, you know.
100%. And I think that's the best thing going into a management relationship is that it's a relationship rather than a business transaction.
Yeah.
Because I think it's very easy to go, like let's say, for instance, if you change management now and you went into a new manager, this manager's walking in with a percentage of money straight away.
Straight away.
And it's like, you've not really earned that. You've not really done anything to earn that.
No, exactly.
So it's like, why would you go into a new relationship? It's like, okay, well, a new relationship is based on the relationship, not the finances.
Yeah.
And then when a relationship builds, the finances come. It's like the fruits of our labor, right? It's like the finances have eventually come if we're lucky enough. And 95% of it's fucking luck. It's all luck, I would say, nearly all luck. But it's even with me, with Ryan, it's like, I want to be successful, so he's successful.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it, really.
Yeah. You're the face, but you know, you start to realize you're a business.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
We're a business. Me and you on the road is a business.
Yeah.
We're the face of our business. And obviously we deal with probably the most of the burden, you know what I mean? But still there's so much back end stuff that goes on that without a team, you'd lose your mind.
Yeah, totally. You know? Totally. And on the flip side of that, there also is a selfish side of it.
Yeah.
Whereas as the artist, you also have to be selfish as who you are and you have to be happy.
Absolutely.
Because realistically, you don't, a lot of artists and a lot of people, it's happened to me in the past, but it's like, you're actually working for your manager.
Yeah.
You're not working for you as an artist, and you might earn great money, but you don't see that money afterwards because the management take a lot of it and expenses and everything like that. And you're actually really left with fuck all. And you're doing all of this work where realistically, if the manager's not doing the 20% of work that they're doing, then it doesn't, you might as well just get an assistant.
Yeah.
Because you can pay an assistant a lot less than 20% of your income.
Absolutely.
And they can be a lot more effective, and you can manage them, and you can be like, do this, do that, do this, get it done. Yeah. You need a manager that's creative. You need a manager that's forward thinking. And also, like, if they're not necessarily like that, it's like, what about this? What about that? Like, can you go and do this? Like, I want to do, I want to do a YouTube channel. Go work out how to be, to do a YouTube channel. Like, just using that for example, like, that's the thing with a manager, is having somebody that creates, listens to your ideas, and then goes and executes it.
Yeah.
That's the key.
Exactly. Yeah. 100%. That's an important factor.
It's tough to find.
Very tough. It's funny. My team really, they managed Roger Sanchez before me.
Yeah.
And I remember, I still tell them this story. When my manager Jermaine reached out to me saying that he was starting his own, you know, team, he asked me for like my biography and all this stuff. And I'm like, what, are you writing a book on me? And he's like, maybe one day. And then, you know, I remember running out of my room and I'm like, Mom, you know, Roger Sanchez's manager wants to, I think, manage me. This is huge. You know, this is big. This is so big. And no matter what, bro, it's, you know, granted, it was definitely a big moment for me, and it was great, but that doesn't mean there's no work to be done.
100%.
You know, I didn't know that 7 years later that, you know, you're still grinding it out.
Yeah.
You know, it's a different animal, this industry. It really is.
I think also, like, on the business side of it, is like, when the manager wants more money, generally they want to earn more money, but only put the same amount of work in.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's the same as us, right? If we want to become more successful, especially at the beginning of our career, we need to write good music. The music has to correlate. We have to sign to certain record labels. We have to do this. We have to do that. We have to put the fucking work. We have to grind.
Yeah.
And if you, as the artist, is giving all the tools to the manager and they want to earn more, they have to go and grind as well. It's a part of the industry. It's the same with agents. You don't, it's very rare that as an agent, like, you just have bookings being thrown at you unless you have the biggest artist in the world.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
But like, you still have to go and grind, especially for the newer artists. And if you're taking a new, there's always a grind. But I think a lot of people just aren't willing to do that grind.
Yeah, I have no patience for laziness at all. I'm like the least laziest person there is. Mm. I feel like I feel bad going to sleep sometimes. That's I have no tolerance for laziness, and I refuse to work with anyone who's lazy.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, sometimes I have to slow myself down a little bit, but I think, you know, more money comes with more responsibility always. When you ask for a raise in a job, it's because you have more responsibility.
Or because you've proven your point already and you're worth it.
Exactly. Exactly. I've made you this. Yeah. This is why I'm worth that.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
But I guess it's a bit different when you're in a management situation, because it's like, the more you earn, the more that they earn, which means that realistically it's down to them to go and... You've done your part as an artist. It's time for them to go and do their part as a manager, and both of your heads come together and work together to get to you all where you want to be.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's true, man. It's a very hard thing to come by when you find the right person or the right team. You know, like we said, that's why you see a lot of people constantly just changing management groups.
I really like it when I see like somebody with like a really young manager, or like it's a really young artist and a really young manager, because it's like, I was talking to a mate last night. He came over for dinner, and one of his friends is like this crazy tech dude that made this like software that automatically marks university papers. And I think like Oxford University bought it for like millions.
That's crazy.
And now this guy is just owns a tech company and like builds tech. But what he did is he did it when he was like 22, 23. Wow. And he then just employed all of his mates, and all of his mates are like early 20s, but they're all earning so much fucking money, but they're all hustling so hard. Like they all have the same mentality of like hustle, hustle, hustle. And it shows off. It shows that you're all willing to just, if you're all willing to fucking put the work in, it pays off and you're all, it eventually comes. And I think that's why I like the whole, like, it's very easy to go to a manager or an agent because they have the biggest artist in the world.
Yeah.
But do you want to be the smallest artist on their roster?
No, it depends. Like, for instance, my agent, Emma, is a big agent, you know, and I'm definitely one of her smaller artists. Yeah. She doesn't take on, you know, artists of, you know, at my level that much, you know, and I think if she's going to take on someone like myself, or when she took me on, you know, I think in her mindset, she's like, this is the kid I'm going to build, you know what I mean? And I'm going to get on him now. And in 5 years, we're going to be, you know, at a different level, or in 2-3 years. I mean, she's awesome. I can't complain about her at all.
She's great. She's great.
We have a really, for the first time in my career, like on the US side and management side, I have a great working relationship with everyone. And it feels like a team. And that's what I wanted. And I remember, like, I'll even say, like, whenever I have a new agent on board, or I'll send them a message like saying like, hey, just want you to know, like, this means a lot to me. I can't wait to crush things with you. Like, this is my expectations. And I want you to know, like, if you're on this team, your family and health comes first, all that stuff comes first, but let's do this together. And anything you need me to do that makes your job maybe a little bit easier or easier to sell me, you let me know, because I'm gonna do what it takes.
Totally.
And I dropped Emma that message when she first took me on. And ever since then, man, we had a relationship prior, you know,
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Did I lose you?
Yeah, but I can hear you now.
Okay, there we go. We had a relationship prior because she was Victor's agent for a few years. And so she knew who I was. Mm. And then it was like, I was the kid that she just kept seeing probably. And then I was the kid that she had to keep approving on billings.
Yeah.
Then sure enough, you know, those approvals just equated to, I guess, all right. Agent.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's
give him a go.
But, you know, it's been great.
It's a wild industry, isn't it?
Yeah, it chews you up and spits you out sometimes, though.
If you look back at, like, when you're 12 years old when you're starting this, 10 years old, 12 years old when you're starting, and someone says, right, you're going to work for the next 15 years, probably not going to earn any money.
Yeah.
But there's 5% chance that at the end of that, you're gonna fucking smash it.
Yeah, there's I don't even think at that age you even know what money is, right?
Well, you, like, don't do it for the money then. That's the amazing thing.
I still don't do it for the money, bro. Shit. I still do it because I love it, you know.
Same.
Like, granted, there's certain shows where I'm not gonna go out there and do because the money's not right. Yeah. But you know, when there's an opportunity that's in front of me and I think it's a good opportunity and maybe the money could be better, I'm still going to go do that.
Yeah, you're going to go prove yourself and go, no, actually, I'm worth this much money.
Yeah, and now and now on the next one, I'm gonna say no, and then after you come back properly, then we'll have a conversation.
Totally. Yeah, I think I think that's just the way it is, isn't it? Is that the money of does eventually come?
Especially for me, I'm breaking in certain markets. Like the this past few weeks, I was breaking into Berlin for the first time. Yeah. I was playing Paris for the first time. London I've played previously, but like there's certain markets, for instance Colombia this weekend, bro, like I'm playing in Colombia for the first time and I'm playing a huge festival. It's a great look, it's amazing. And I truly feel like, you know, there's some hype around me playing in Colombia for the first time, it's just great. But I need to show my worth, I need to prove myself, I need to smash that, you know. And then I'm definitely going to come in balls deep and go, but you know, it's tricky when you're breaking into a market for the first time. You know, you want to make sure they're going to love you.
Yeah. And, it's tough as well, but especially if you're like, you've never been to the market, you don't know what to expect. You don't know what they actually listen to. Like Colombia listens to very different music than to what you and I play, like, which is really interesting. But I think the thing is for me is like when you're going into a setting and you've never been there before, or you're going into a setting where you're on a lineup that maybe you don't fit or whatever, it's like, I've got to fucking win these over.
Yeah, exactly, man. Yeah, I'm going to play anything I can play to just win them over and get big reactions from them. But I don't think
ABBA,
you know,
ABBA always works, mate.
Right. These last 2 years, I feel like everyone just plays ABBA.
Oh my God, it's so annoying.
Oh my God.
It's so annoying.
Yeah, it's like enough.
It's like, okay, it was done really well at one point. Like the first person, I don't know who did it. I think it was like Dennis Salter that did it.
Yeah.
Like, who's a G at he's a fucking great DJ.
Yeah, he is.
And then everybody tries to do it and it's like, no.
Yeah. Come on, man. Get a new classic.
There's a time and a place, people. There's thousands of classics.
Yeah, like, for real. Like, there's so many.
There's so many other good ABBA records that are actually better. Oh,
I know. Shit, play Dancing Queen at this point.
Mate, should we do it?
Yeah, we should. I would, bro, fuck it.
Let's do a remix. Should we do a remix?
We should rip some Bee Gees records, bro. I mean, Bee Gees kill.
Now we're talking.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean, for real.
Should we do an edit of
one? A Bee Gees edit?
And then put it on Beatport. And then every techno person will get mad at you for putting it out. Exactly. It will go number one on techno straight away, though.
Yeah. Oh, God. that sounds familiar, buddy.
Yeah, it sounds really familiar.
Yeah.
Oh, I love
it. What are you up to this weekend?
Well, when this comes out, this isn't going to be this weekend.
True.
This comes out in like 3 weeks.
Oh, so 3 weeks. Oh, damn. Wait, 3 weeks.
Yeah, mate. I'm literally like banking these in because I only have one day a month to record.
This comes out on the 20th, the week of Thanksgiving.
So Mika, comes out on the 22nd.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Very cool. Awesome.
Yeah. So you would have just played. You would have just played in Colombia. Probably got mugged.
I got to make sure I take off my gold chains.
Eating some arepas.
Yeah.
Tiago will be worrying about you literally every step of the way.
He told me, he's like, bro, I was worried for Will. I was making sure he was good.
He's such a warrior. It's crazy. I love him. He's
the man, bro. But crazy. People love him.
Yeah, he's the best, man. He's gonna do good stuff as well. But this weekend I'm actually playing in Bristol.
Oh, nice.
First time in a very long time I'm playing at a club that I used to throw parties at, and they finally booked me.
Really?
Yeah. It's been a struggle for me to like get a booking in Bristol, which is very weird for me. But yeah, I'm playing a day party with Patrick
Tomlin. How far is that from your house?
30 minutes.
That's mint.
Yeah, day party.
Great. Don't you love that, though? Don't you love that?
It's like in Detroit when I play Detroit. It's like 10 minutes from my house.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm in bed, in my own bed, shower. It's fucking the best.
I know, bro. The best is playing home shows. Like, I mean, granted, the last few home shows, I was coming in from another show.
Yeah.
Or like the last one at City Fox, I was doubled up, so I was shot. Mm. But it's nice playing at home.
Mm.
I think there's nothing better than playing home. Like, it's just everyone.
Everyone comes as well, and it's like a good excuse. Like this weekend, all my family are coming because it's a day party. So
that's
like mum, dad, brother, sister, all of their partners, like the lads that are not ravers at all that you wouldn't ever catch in a club, that probably have never stepped foot in a club before. Like they're coming, all my old like mates that I used to live in Ibiza with and throw parties with, they're all coming. So yeah, it's always going to be.
Yeah, it's a fam jam, bro. I love those.
It doesn't even matter if it's a shit party. It's not going to be a shit party, but it's it doesn't matter when everyone's there.
Yeah, no, it's the best.
Yeah.
It really is. It's I'm waiting for like a big, big party to just invite my whole family at. Like a day party, huge party. Just in waiting for that right one to say like, all right, I want you guys to come and see this.
One of my career goals is to fly out all my family to a show.
Yeah.
Like in America, like a massive headline show.
Yeah. No, dude, I mean, my plan is like the minute I get like a nice big Italy booking or Ibiza booking, it's game on. It's just like, all right, we're all going to Europe for the week, 2 weeks. You guys come. Let's I want you to see this, you know?
Yeah, man. It's nice feeling.
Yeah. No, it's definitely nice when you could have everyone behind you and having a good time.
It's just like we travel so often. Maybe you don't know. You travel with Diego a lot.
Yeah.
So like you're always traveling with someone.
Yeah, he's pretty good and he comes with me a lot.
When's he gonna bin you off?
I don't know, man. Whenever he gets sick of me. I think he loves it though. Like he tells me, bro, he's like, I miss you know, if we don't tour one weekend, he's like, dude, I feel like we're not doing anything.
Yeah,
he's like,
I miss. Yeah.
You know, so he definitely has that urge to keep wanting to tour. But we gotta make him a beast. You know what I mean?
Definitely. That's the goal. Do you, so you like touring with people?
I don't mind it ever.
Yeah.
I hate kind of touring alone. See, like you have friends pretty much everywhere you go.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, like certain markets, like bro, if I was touring in Colombia by myself, I'd be like,
yeah,
you know, I don't have anyone. Actually, I do have a few friends down there, but still, you know, it depends where you're going. Mm. Like, it's crazy, man. I was on a family vacation this past summer. I had like a few days to just go down to the shore with them, and every year we go down to Wildwood Crest in Cape May.
Yeah,
and that's like. Anyone who doesn't know, that's like the tip of New Jersey. And we've been going there for 30 years. So for me, it's just a place that ever since I've been born, we've been going to. And it hits home for me. It's a very, you know, nice week for me to go down. And I enjoy it because I have a lot of memories there.
Yeah.
But this year, you know, I only had a few days to go down. And I had to go back home and go straight from, you know, there to Dallas, then to Europe for a week and a half.
Yeah.
And I was feeling it, man. Like I felt a little like homesick. I was kind of like upset to leave everything.
Mm.
And you know, I didn't have Tiago with me in Dallas. And I mean, I had a few friends down there anyway, but like still there was just a part of me that just I wanted to be there, but I didn't want to be there either, you know, and I missed like my family and everything. And, you know, I kept texting my fiance. I was like, yeah, I think I'm homesick. I don't know what's going on. Like, I'm just not in the mood. And then as soon as I landed in Ibiza, I was like, all right, game over.
Fuck everybody else.
Yeah, fuck that. You're being soft. Stop being a little bitch. But yeah, no, it was, you know, those moments, bro, you know, you can't put a price on them. That's the truth, you know. And even last yesterday, I did an interview with Katie, and she asked Katie Knight, and she asked me, you know, if you could have everything in the world, what's your dream? And I said, beautiful family, beautiful kids, beautiful home to live in, and, you know, a shore home in Wildwood Crest or Cape May, and a pizzeria that I could retire in.
Yeah.
And if I get all that, I'll be the happiest pig and shit there is. Mm. And she's like, the pizzeria did it for me. I was like, yeah, no, everyone loves that. But I was like, yeah, man, I just like those things are so important. Family is such a big, important factor in having a career.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of artists risk not having a family because their career is so big already. And that to me is like it's a void. That would be a huge void in my life if I wasn't able to do that.
Yeah. It's interesting for me because family is like such a big thing for me.
Yeah.
But my family that I have already.
Gotcha.
Like not like that. The having kids has never been on the cards for me. What we were really? Talking about the other day, but it's never been on the cards for me. And I thought at the beginning of this year that maybe if I met the one, like maybe I'd change my mind and want a kid. Like,
yeah.
But after this summer, I'm like, how can I do summers like this and have a kid?
I think the same way, you know,
yeah.
What we do is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
And touring nonstop is not easy.
Mm.
And the sacrifice you take is time away from your family and, totally. And all yeah, that. Yeah. But I do think it is doable.
I think it's doable if you want to do it.
Yeah. Like you have to want to do it. I want three kids. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it.
My sister's got three kids under the age of like 7 and it's fucking mental.
Yeah. No, I have to time align it a little bit. But I definitely want
to
have,
you're going to have to start soon, mate.
Like 2-3 years maybe.
Yeah.
I got to get my touring still. Like I still got to get things going.
Is the plan for your fiance would be the ideal plan is that she doesn't have to work?
To be honest, we've spoken about that, but I don't think she'll ever want to stop working, but maybe she could take a different role as a nurse maybe work from home, or work somewhere closer or, you know, something that's not as many days, or as many long hours. But dude, I mean, like my mom can't wait until I pop out a kid, you know, she can't wait. Her family can't wait. You know, like, it's just like, it's all hands on deck. And when you look at like your life and growing up, you know, sometimes your parents weren't always with you and you had family members that would help you,
Totally.
Like my dad was in a very similar situation. He had a wedding band and, you know, when I had baseball on the weekends, he would make my morning game and then he would have to go do a wedding.
Yeah.
And it's very similar where it's like, you know, if my kid's playing a sport or if my daughter or whatever has something to do in the morning, you know, I will work my flights around doing what I have to do. And that, I guess that's the balance. Like there's almost all of the DJs that I'm pretty tight with, they all have families and you could see, you know, as soon as they land home, it's just, I got to go help my family. I got to do this. And I mean, like Victor has a son. Now he's older, he's in college, but I always asked him, like, yo, how is balancing everything? And he's like, dude, it's all manageable. It can get tough, but you know, it's just time management.
Yeah, it's just whatever makes you happy. I did a podcast with Tim Green literally like a couple of hours before this and he's got a daughter and he was talking about how it's like the best thing that happened to him.
Yeah.
And it's like
a lot.
Yeah. It just changes everything where literally the career actually doesn't matter as much, which actually frees the mind up to make it. And then it becomes more successful.
Yeah. It's crazy because you need your career obviously to be able to afford having
especially child. In America.
Oh yeah. Supposedly I think by the time they're 20, we spent like $1 million on them or something like that.
Yeah. You could buy like a fucking estate in Detroit for that.
Yeah, I know.
By it's a crazy. Street.
But yeah, I think it's that balance. Totally. I think honestly, bro, if you found like the right person, you're going to want a kid.
Yeah. Whatever. We'll see.
Yeah, you will. See. You will. We'll it's all about the right person.
I think you want me to have a kid more than
I do. Than... So I could, you know, I could be Uncle Ant. You know what I mean?
Like my mate that came over last night, he was like, "I want you to have kids, Will." I'm like, yeah. "Why does everybody want me to have kids and I don't?"
No, I think you'd be a good dad.
I don't think I'd be a bad dad, but I think this is also the thing that I struggle with. I had such a good childhood. Like my mom and dad are like the fucking best.
Yeah, same,
and,
man.
Like I don't think I could be half as good as them.
You think that, but knowing the way you grew up, you're going to want to do.
Yeah, I want to do better.
More. Yeah,
and it's like, how? Like physically how? But we'll see. It's never say never, right. But right now it's a never.
Yeah.
How's pizza? Right. How's pizza life?
Pizza life is good, dude. We just bought another. We have the food truck. We have the trailer. And we just bought a little mini truck, the little mini pickup trucks.
Oh, sick.
Literally bought it yesterday. We're going to put a Gosney on it.
Sick.
And the food truck's also going to get two Gosneys. We're just getting it built out.
The domes or the
rock box. The domes. I have both domes in my garage right now. And then we have three domes, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, we fucking went balls deep on this stuff, man.
Did Tom help? Did he respond to
you? Good. No, yeah, they hooked us up, dude. Sick. Big time. They did. They really did.
He's
they
a
hooked
G. us up. He's a G.
Yeah. I don't know if it was, I don't know if Tom like put two and two together, but whoever, you know, we were emailing, really like, you know, we told them our plans and what we want to do and they're about it.
Sick.
So this mini truck will probably be the first like Gosney mini truck in the States, I think. I gotta look. But it's gangster. It's so cool. It's like this little mini pickup truck, and on the back of it, we're gonna have it all decked out with the oven, the cutting boards to do everything, and just make it like a 25 to 50 person type of party.
Yeah,
that's dope. And it's bro, the thing goes like 60 miles an hour. It drives street legal. Really, really cool.
Are you gonna do the food truck in like? In the city and stuff like that?
Yeah, we're planning to do that. We got a lot of things to get done. Like we have a few pop-ups coming up. We got to finish the food truck too. So, I'm looking forward to this downtime with the summer not being as hectic, you know?
Yeah.
So like January, February is like really our time to, granted, I'll still be touring in and out, but like at least during the week,
you can get shit done.
Yeah, you know, we still need to game plan like where our home base is going to be and all that stuff. I mean, with the pizza truck, I would love to have it in the city. And I think, you know, having the connections that I have, you know, with promoters and stuff in the city, we could even work it out where it ends up at, you know, a few parties during the summer.
That'd be dope.
Yeah, man, I that's the plan with it. Like, I want to have it at parties that I'm playing.
There's something amazing about having a venue that has food and, like...
Oh, yeah.
It's so much nicer.
It is. Especially, like, bro, Avant Garner has, like, great food.
Yeah.
And the tech support guys, they have a food truck that's outside. And the owner of Tech Support's brother he's a chef. He's a dope chef, you know, he kills it. He does like cool burgers and chicken sandwiches. It's dope. But yeah, I would love to have the pizza oven anywhere I'm playing.
Yeah. So cool. How do you balance it? How do you balance it with music?
This summer, I was barely here this summer, but, you know, when I come home, I make sure everything's aligned. My sister really has been a big help. She's got a culinary degree. She's been taking on like all the catering side of things.
Nice.
And then luckily I have another partner. You've met Joe.
Yeah.
I have my partner Joe, who's, you know, hands on as well. And now it's a matter of just finding the staff to really, you know, push out the amount of volume we want to do. Cause now we have three separate
businesses, really.
We have three separate businesses. We have three separate, you know, pizza trucks that can go out. So now it's one's going to be concession and two are going to be for private parties.
Yeah.
And it's really just having the manpower behind it. You know, I have my cousin that knows how to make pizza. Joe knows how to make pizza. If I'm home, I know how to make pizza. But honestly, I don't even think I maybe have done like 3 jobs this summer.
Yeah.
And they were during the week to help him out. But I'm still pretty hands-on with like what we're putting out as far as the menu goes. Like, we're doing a pop-up on the 12th of December. And, you know, I helped curate with my sister, like, what we're going to do.
Yeah.
I called in a few of my friends who are chefs to come do the pop-up with us. And, you know, it's cool when you have, like, a good family dynamic behind you to help.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's no way I can do this on my own. And granted, you know, having Joe is a big, big help because he'll take on all the client relation stuff. Yeah. And dealing with all that. You know, granted, I try to be as hands-on as I can, especially when I come home. You know, I'm always helping out. And it's a great business, man. It really is. It's something that I'm creatively passionate about, just like music.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that can really, you know, there's, I don't know what it is. I love cooking. As you know, bro, you love to cook too. It's something that I feel like it just gives me that creative dynamic that I need outside of music.
I think it's not really nice to be able to have something else outside of music.
It is. It definitely is. Bro, it's funny. I've been recognized at like a few of our jobs, you know, and then be like, yo, what the fuck are you doing here, bro? I'm like, I'm like, yo, it's Tuesday. Like, I just got home yesterday. But yeah, I'm here. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's cool though. But again, it goes back to what we're talking about with management. It's just about having the right team. Like, anything's possible.
It is.
Anything, as long as you have the right people around you and kind of are willing to put that time in.
Yeah. We've had a few opportunities to open up a shop. I really want to get our mobile side down pat before we would open up a shop. This way, like, you know, it's easier to delegate a little bit. You know, I can't be in a different country. My sister and Joe are dealing with the mobile side, and then you have a shop, and who's running the shop? You know what I mean?
Like, it's a lot of work. You need to find the right people to help you with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're on to a few things. We got a few solid things in the works, but it's all about figuring it all out, you know, and making sure that, you know, this could be full time all year round. And granted, it definitely can be. I think with the food truck, it makes that seasonal business now more all year round, which is great.
Yeah, yeah.
With this mini truck, I think, you know, it's going to crush the summer. I think we'll go after like big corporate clients with it because it's appealing. It's very appealing. Yeah. Like Dolce & Gabbana will call you to make pizza.
Totally.
Now, because
it's cool.
You have a niche. You have that little cool niche.
Yeah.
You know,
no, it's, I agree. And I think that's the way you create, you grow the brand and you build the brand. It's exactly the same with music.
Exactly, man.
Exactly. The same. It's
our
like
niches are music.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, having a,
but it's not always our music, which is crazy.
No,
nowadays
it's not. I mean, now it's not. Now it's about, you know, Instagram and social media. But like, it's funny, man. Like, I wore that beanie during ADE, right? And
which one?
The brown beanie when I went to come see you play.
Okay, yeah.
And Oliver Heldens didn't recognize me.
Really?
I saw my drum code the next day and I wore a Yankee hat.
Yeah.
And he came right up to me. And a few people told me that, like, yo, I didn't recognize you without a Yankee hat.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, damn, do I really wear a Yankee hat that much?
Yep.
And I look back, I do.
Yeah, all the obviously. Time.
And now it's become a part of like my artist identity. And that really wasn't on purpose at all. It's just I love the Yankees and I just like wearing Yankee hats. I have a bunch. But now it's become a part of my identity and it's like, granted, it says where I'm from and everything like that. But like now people put the Yankee hat
as part of you.
My face. Yeah.
It's true. It's true, man.
It's crazy.
It's the same with me. Like,
yeah, if you shaved your beard, no one would recognize you.
Mate, I remember playing a festival, Dirty Bird Camp Out, like 2018, and it was dusty as fuck and cold at night. And I wore like a balaclava. Not a balaclava. What did the Cowboys wear? Yeah, like a mask over there. I put some like glasses on as well, and mm-hmm. I put like not sunglasses, like fake glasses.
Yeah.
And I had like a hat, and no one, like I had a conversation with Justin Martin, and he didn't have a fucking clue who it was.
No way.
Yeah. He didn't have a
clue. That's hysterical.
And it's like, it just, like I can be with bigger DJs next to me.
Yeah.
But because I have a beard, they recognize me over the bigger DJ just purely because like of how I look. And I think that's the thing. I think it's really important. I think it's really important to have.
No, identity is definitely big, man.
Yeah. It's
wearing certain clothing, the way you wear it.
I've always said the beard helped my career.
Yeah.
It might sound stupid, but it helped my career massively.
Yeah.
Because it's like, who's the bearded guy?
It's fun. Would you ever shave it? Just fuck for shit's sake?
No. Yeah.
How the hell do you wash that thing, bro? It's like, you
just
have
the same
to, like,
as you wash your pubes, mate.
Really? Same way.
Yeah.
You just lather it in shampoo.
Or do you shave the balls?
Always shave.
Yeah,
shave.
Keep them trim, mate. Keep them trim. Especially in the summer in New York, Jesus.
Oh yeah, forget about it. You can't walk those streets, bro. You'll burn your pubes by walking over a sewer. I mean, you can't do that.
Singed, just smell singed hair.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Singed, sweaty bull hair. It's never good. Are you gonna do another album?
I will. Yeah. Yeah, I think we'll probably gear up for that soon.
Is that on the cards?
Yeah, I got it right. Bro, if I showed you my SoundCloud right now and how many demos we have, it's like half of it's already written.
Yeah.
You know?
That's cool.
Yeah, I definitely want to do it. I think, you know, Eric was telling me, he's like, bro, your first album puts you on your map. The second album blows you the fuck up. And I was like, he's right. When you look at someone's second album, it's always the one that, like, took them off. Like, it was like, for instance, Off the Wall for Michael Jackson. That put Michael Jackson on the map heavy.
You comparing yourself to Michael Jackson?
Yeah. No, never that. but then you look at Thriller, and Thriller was like what put Michael Jackson over the edge of being Michael Jackson.
Do you also like putting your tongue on little boys' buttholes as well?
No, I never do that, but I do love Michael Jackson.
I don't.
As an artist?
I can't do it.
Ow.
Like, don't get me wrong, the songs are great. But there's like, okay, let's talk controversy, right?
Yeah.
10 Walls. Alright. Okay. Right, let's talk about this. 10 Walls said some awful shit about gay people. Got cancelled, can't even play another fucking show in the whole of his life. Physically, he did nothing to anybody.
Yeah.
And I know mental and physical is exactly the same, right?
Yeah.
He also made one of the biggest records of the time at that time.
Yeah.
Okay. Michael Jackson literally rapes little boys. And everyone still worships him. And 10 Walls, Michael Jackson, completely different. Like, Michael Jackson's obviously a lot bigger, better, whatever. Like, the songs are great, but I still find it very weird that there's cancel culture in this, which I don't agree with. But when somebody's actually done something bad.
Cancel culture got a lot worse, though, after Michael Jackson died. You know, you never know what Michael Jackson would be like right now with cancel culture.
I just struggle with it.
I totally agree. I kind of keep them separate in my head. Like, what he's done creatively is next to none. I love his music. I listen to his music a lot. But like, I'm not looking at him as the person.
Totally. Yeah.
And I think as a person, he battled a lot of demons just being growing up, 5 years old. Famous.
Literally 5 years old and famous. Yeah.
But that's never an excuse, obviously.
No, you always know what's right and wrong as an adult, right? And
yeah, no, exactly.
There comes a point when you know what's right and wrong. I like to hope. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I didn't have his childhood.
No, me neither.
But I also...
Musically, he's the GOAT. He's insane.
Quincy's the GOAT.
Exactly.
Quincy is. That's my thing. Quincy's the GOAT.
Quincy is the GOAT. Do you ever see his documentary?
Watched it so many times.
Yeah, it's insane the career he's had.
Yeah, and still has.
I mean, yeah, it's phenomenal that he's almost 90 years old, I think.
Yeah, and still going. You Googling it?
He's crushing it. How old is Quincy Jones? Let's see. Yeah, he's 89. And the guy looks like he's 60.
Freaking wild. It's wild.
Born in 1933, man. Worked with anyone from Frank Sinatra to Michael Jackson.
He was born before Second World War.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah, he's a badass dude, man. He is.
Who's like the modern day Quincy?
Probably
Max Martin.
Yeah, Max Martin's up there. Timbaland's pretty fucking powerful too.
Dre, I guess.
Yeah, Dre. I think Timbaland over Dre.
Yeah, I think Dre was more like a period.
Because I think Timbaland like wrote more pop records as well.
Yeah.
Like I mean, Timbaland and Justin Timberlake were like on pop, man, like insane. I don't know. I don't think you can't compare.
It's different.
Quincy
it's
to
different.
Anyone. Yeah,
it's different it's, music it's
different,
as well.
Different era music. Yeah.
Quincy influenced everybody, though.
Yeah, he did.
I don't know a single pop writer that doesn't like Quincy's stuff.
Yeah, no, man. When you think of Quincy Jones, he's definitely the greatest of all time.
Yeah. Imagine
it's
being
like Stevie Wonder, bro. It's like, what can't Stevie Wonder do?
Imagine being the best of who do you think, like, obviously this is personal opinion, but who do you think is the best of the best in our industry? Like, where like is there anybody that's like stands out that's like this person is the fucking best over everybody? Like
Quincy,
like just like, yeah, not personal, not as a person, but like as a producer, as what they've achieved, like almost like Quincy Jones. It's tough, isn't it? Because it's still so young, our genre.
Yeah, our genre is still very young. I think someone who's been like crossed paths a bunch, you know, it depends what. It's rough, man. I would say for our generation, someone like Maceo Plex, because he's done so much different music from deep house. Like he literally, he stemmed that whole deep house movement.
Yeah.
Melodic techno movement. And he could make anything he wants to make. Yeah. I think in the studio, he's pretty insane.
He just put out a hip hop record.
What's that?
He just put out a hip hop record.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Armin van Helden for me.
Armin van Helden. Yeah, I would say that too. I mean, that guy's a.
Obviously, you got Daft Punk as well.
Yeah, but Daft Punk has their style, only their style.
Yeah.
In a way.
True.
You know?
Yeah, because Armin, like, did Bonk. He did, like, he's done a lot of very big commercial records.
Oh, yeah. No, without a doubt. I think, honestly, too, Calvin Harris, man, is.
Oh, Calvin, yeah.
You know, like another breed. I was going originally when I was thinking like more underground, but like when you think Calvin Harris too, bro, he's touched everything.
Calvin. But I also think Calvin's the GOAT of like pop nowadays.
Yeah. Like pop, dance music. Yeah.
He's just, he's still one of the biggest streamers in the world.
Yeah. No, for sure. Off the record, I think even someone like Bruno Mars is pretty...
Pharrell.
Yeah, Pharrell. Like, those guys are real deal.
Bruno and Anderson .Paak at this moment
killer
in time.
Album.
Just
yeah, I mean, that
killing.
I mean that album is insane.
So
super
good.
Super underrated.
But also, like, I like that it's underrated because the legacy of it is unbelievable.
Yeah, it
like,
is.
Like, they're making modern-day Motown.
Yeah, exactly. That's why, to me, I was eating it all up. I was like, yo, this is insane.
I'm all over that shit.
Yeah, no, it's unreal.
Because no one really makes, I don't know, makes shit like that. It's all
no one does. Not anymore.
It's all, it's more, it's not all, this is massively generalizing and I'm a dickhead for doing it, but it feels like a lot of pop music is packaged up and
yep.
just to be nicely marketed for TikTok or for whatever.
Yeah. Or a girl shaking her ass or a guy doing some crazy shit. Yeah. Like that's just what it's become.
Where are you at this moment in time with releasing shorter techno records for Spotify?
Yeah, I would say in the last year or so, I've definitely been shortening it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Especially for like Spotify. But don't get me wrong, I still have 7-minute tracks.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on the record.
Yeah, yeah.
For me. It all depends. But yeah, like a track like Baby for me, I made sure I shortened that up a little bit. Like when it was time to release.
Did good. Baby did good, man.
Yeah, Baby did good. Set It Off actually did the best, I think, out of my records. But
still bangs.
Yeah, I haven't played it in so long though. It's great. I
played it this weekend.
Did you?
You don't like playing your own records, do you? You're like big ones.
I'm sick of it, bro. I've been playing that record for so long.
Yeah.
3 years. I'm on to the new shit. You know what I mean? The shit that's gonna come out in like 2-3 years probably.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't play much of anybody's music.
Yeah.
I play a bit of yours, I play a bit of Maceo's.
Yeah.
Play not much else. And then all of mine, really.
Yeah. So a lot of your sets are all original.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I would say like maybe depending on how long I'm playing, if I had an hour set, like 3 tracks are mine, 4 tracks.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't know what you're going to get until you get there.
Mm.
Right. So one thing I don't like to do is play a record after a record that are mine. Yeah. Like I don't like playing my records back to back.
I do that all the time.
I know. I don't know. It's just a pet peeve of mine for myself. I don't know what it is. I'm like, you selfish prick. You're playing your records twice.
But I also think like there's this, and this is the best thing I learned from my old managers was your people are paying to see you.
See you. Yeah, I get
and
that.
And people like nowadays, it's not like you're paying to see a DJ. It's not like the way we're getting booked. You're not, people aren't paying to see you as a DJ. They're paying you because they know your music. They're not paying you to because they like your DJ sets, if you know what I mean. Unless you're like Ricardo or someone like that, where it's like you are just a quintessential DJ. Like it feels like now, like you're getting booked because of your music and because of who you are as a producer.
Yeah.
And I think like that, my managers were like, I learned it from touring with MK. And just like, his shows, especially his really big shows, like goes in.
Yeah, he's got to play all of his hits.
Got to. And if he doesn't, people get pissed. And people feel, it's like going to see Rolling Stones and they don't play a single one of their hits. How would you feel?
Yeah, they don't play Brown Sugar, I'm going to go nuts.
Exactly. Change it up, man. Come on, play your music. It's good.
Yeah, it's like Chaka Khan too. How can't you play like some of your hits?
Exactly. And
so now I got to play Baby every set?
Every set and Set It Off.
Fuck.
And No Disco.
Yeah, that one did not blow up the way I expected it to blow up. I mean, everyone played it, but like I thought that record was going to go off.
Mate, I don't have a fucking clue what does well and what doesn't now. I am so like so amazed with how shit everything has got. Where like classic for me, like Throw Your Soul Down.
Yeah.
We've had the first week of it got released, we had 250 radio plays, okay, over Europe. Second week it came out, we had 200 radio plays.
BBC played it, right?
Yeah, we got a bunch of BBC as well. This week it's had 188 radio plays. Okay. Spotify playlisted it on one playlist for a week at number 70, and it's done not even 100,000 in nearly a month.
Wow.
And it's like, doesn't correlate. Nothing correlates.
Oh, no, bro. I mean, we were going through this last night. I had my photographer and marketing guy, Dave, on a Zoom call, and my management, and we were just going over logistics and analytics and all this shit that really, for us, it's like chicken scratch.
Yeah.
You have to know about it.
Yeah.
And pay attention to it because it's a huge part of our career. But it's just like, you know, you start looking at certain ratios, right? Like a certain artist or a DJ's following on Instagram. Then you check out their Spotify and you're like,
yeah,
something's off. And then you go to look at like YouTube or YouTube plays. And then you're like, or Twitter, or you know what I mean? Like Twitter, I think Twitter's kind of died down. I just use Twitter to vent a little bit. Like I think it's fun to vent on. But like my Twitter following has, I had nothing on my Twitter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't post anything other than me venting on Twitter.
Talking about burning the pizza.
Yeah, exactly. But it's crazy. You know, you start looking at certain things in analytics and you're like, oh, wow, a lot of this is smoke and mirrors, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's really important to talk about it because it's like a lot of people that aren't in the industry see it and they don't look at the number.
No one does anything about it.
No one does anything about it because there's nothing that can be done about it. Really, like we're literally at the peril of the tech industry now. Before it was the record industry, and now it's the tech industry. Which, hey, I actually don't care about. I'm fine with it. It is what it is. It's just very weird right now. It's very weird. If your music doesn't fit in a sound, you're fucked.
No, you are. But I also think you're not fucked. Like, you have your own sound, right?
Yeah, and for me, that's way more important than having a million streams.
Exactly. And I think for me as well, I have my own sound. Granted, it could be harder techno, it could be, but it's in its own world.
Yeah,
and I think that is so much more important.
Yeah.
I think, granted, having, like, Eric back me on doing stuff with Elam and releasing from different outlets. That is big because you're getting the cosign. But dude, you know what? Like this summer after touring and seeing different stages and all that stuff, I said to myself, you're so much more valuable than playing on a certain stage or fitting the form.
Yeah.
And what you're creating is something that other artists aren't creating. And that enough will be enough to do your own thing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's so important to know your worth. And to be honest, you need to know that you have that niche because everyone could say that they have their own niche, but half this industry is just copying each other.
100%. More than half.
And I know I don't sound like anybody.
Yeah.
I'm pretty damn good at knowing that I don't sound like someone. Yeah. And same thing as you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You have your own identity, your own sounds. And that's what makes it cool, you know, and that's what makes it fun. Because I feel like that's so much more valuable on building a fan base.
Mm-hmm. Well, people come to you for that specific thing. And for me, it's egotistically, but it's a legacy as well. You're built like Armin van Helden. No one sounds like Armin van Helden.
No, and granted, he's sampling the shit out of other records.
But listen to Daft Punk. Daft Punk's not a fucking... They're all samples. No, there's not a single original there.
No, it's true, man.
But no one could recreate that. No, yeah, I could. If somebody gave me Armin van Helden samples, I could never recreate it.
No. You can't. And, yeah, and when you find the original, you're like, God damn it, man. Yeah.
He motherfucker.
Like, you asshole, bro.
But he sampled so well. It wasn't sampling the biggest hits.
No, and it's the way he created his grooves over those samples.
Yeah.
Like, I was listening to, you ever listen to Gandhi Khan?
Maybe.
Oh, I'm putting you onto this, man. This is a bomb.
Send it over.
Yeah. This is a good record. It's a bomb.
Sick. I'll check it after.
Yeah. But like the sample use on it is so cool, bro.
Yeah.
Eric played this when we were in Berlin, and I haven't heard it in such a long time. And I turned around, I was like, damn, dude.
Motherfucker.
Like,
pulled it out of the bag.
He's a huge Armin van Helden fan, too.
He's the best.
Yeah, he is. He's the best for me. It's crazy, bro. I think he's from Boston.
Is he?
Yeah, he's from Boston originally.
I thought he was a Miami boy.
No, he was in the New York circle for a while, too.
Yeah, that makes sense. His sound is very New York.
Yeah, it is. Boston and New York had a huge crossover, going back and forth. Yeah, he's originally from Boston.
Boston.
Love it. Sausage.
Sausage. Oh, man, we've just done an hour and a half. Let's wrap this fucker up. How can people follow you? How can people listen to your music?
Apple ID makes these new tags. You could just stick an AirTag on me. You can follow me anytime.
Getting those dad jokes in before you have kids, mate. Yeah. Come on.
Absolutely. You can follow me on Instagram at Avision, Facebook at Avision NYC, I think, and Twitter at Avision Official. You know, if you don't know me, ask about me.
Go listen to his music.
Spotify at Avision.
If you go see him DJ, he probably won't play his biggest records, but still go see him. He's still pretty good.
Exactly. I'll have some more bigger records to play, hopefully. That's the whole point.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
All right, mate.
When do I see you next, Willie?
I see you at your wedding.
Oh, shit. Damn.
That you've actually told me nothing about.
Oh, what do you need to know? I got you.
Well, let's wrap up and then we can find everything else out. I don't want to tell everyone on the podcast. Love you, dude. Yeah, see you in a bit. Bye.
True, brother. Thank you, bro.
And that is a wrap. Big love to everybody. Listen, big love to Avision for coming on. Go follow him. Go listen to his music. It's dope. Please hit subscribe. Please share. And I'll see you next time. Keep safe.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.